Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Carrie, Davy, get down here pronto, Melanie shrieked. The water's rising and we have to get out fast. Where's Muffin? 8-year-old Carrie yelled as she clattered down the stairs, clutching her favorite doll. I've got her, called 12-year-old David, meeting them at the front door, a beagle puppy on a leash in his arms. Let's go, Melanie whisked them out the door, slamming and locking it behind her. Where's Dad? Carrie's lower lip began to tremble. I'll call him again when we get to the evacuation center, sweetie. Melanie started the car and pulled out into the street. I'm sure he heard the sirens and will join us at the shelter. If he can get through, David added. Just look at all the cars. Hope we can get to the center before the river gets to us. Now, David, began Melanie.
Dog food, interrupted Carrie. We forgot Muffin's food. Oh, what will she eat?
Carrie began to wail. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help promote children's social and emotional well-being in the event of an environmental disaster? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has had much experience with these kinds of issues. Dr. Edith H. Grotberg is a psychologist who has been involved in issues concerning the well-being of children, both as a professor and as a director of research in the administration for children, youth, and families in the Department of Health and Human Services of the federal government. She was increasingly concerned that most of our attention was on what was wrong with children and families and not on what was strong, helpful, and enriching. And that led her to study resilience. Dr. Grotberg has 3 grown children, a son and 2 daughters, and 7 grandchildren. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Grotberg.
Thank you very much. I'm just delighted to be here.
In the event of an environmental disaster, what is likely to impact most on children's social and emotional well-being?
Fear. Their reaction will be fear. And their immediate reaction after feeling the fear is to seek out their parents. The importance of parents for children of any age. Whenever there's a disaster, fear hits the children, even the teenagers, and they reach for their parents. Because children will tend to regress. Mm-hmm. When they're in a traumatic situation, they emotionally regress, they behaviorally regress, and they cling back now to parents. So that's the first reaction you're going to get. And it's what the parents do then that determines how well they will deal with this. If parents aren't resilient, their children aren't going to be resilient. I can tell you of a real situation that happened in Peru. And a young woman did her PhD dissertation on the issue there. There was a group of Indians in Peru way up in the mountains, and they were in a state of war. They were the victims of the war. Peru had a very strong civil war not too many years ago. And so the government in Lima thought, well, we'll bring those people down from the hill and put them on the edge of Lima so that they're safe. So they brought these families down. And after a couple of years, the study was done to see what had happened to these people. And there were basically 2 kinds of people. There were the people who just dreamed about the past, who wanted to go back to the mountains, who became depressed, who didn't want to stay there, who didn't make any friends, who couldn't get jobs. They really were homesick and very angry and very depressed. Their children were likewise that way. There was another group of parents that said, oh, my goodness, we can get a job, we can get some money here. Our children will learn Spanish for the first time. We have access to all kinds of cultural events. Isn't this fine? Now, they also dreamed about the past from time to time, but didn't stick with it. They were living in the present and the future, finding out what is effective now, what is helping us now, and using that. Their children were resilient. So parent modeling is so critical to the promotion of resilience in children and how children deal with the adversities that they're going to face.
It's almost as though resilience is connected to mental plasticity a little bit.
That's an interesting word. Certainly it has to be a flexibility. Resilience is a human capacity. This is not limited. Everyone has the capacity to become resilient. Unfortunately, in all the studies, including mine in 27 sites and 22 countries, I found, again, Only a third of the people are resilient, and yet it's a human capacity that everyone can be resilient. But only a third of the people have promoted it in themselves or in others. And every study finds exactly the same thing. So we're talking two-thirds of the people who have not developed something that's innate.
Isn't that interesting? But it sounds like it's really dependent on the parents. The kids of the parents who were not resilient then were not resilient. You didn't have some rebels who became resilient.
There's an interesting story here. When some of the early research was done, the people had assumed a deficit model, that if you had a bad environment, you're not going to be functioning. And so they were studying, and what they found was that a number of the children, in fact, were resilient. They were doing fine in these pathological homes. So they thought they had misdiagnosed the parents. Well, what turned out, as they began to study further, they found these children were reaching out for a grandma, they were reaching out for a neighbor, they were reaching out for a teacher who was guiding them through. And interesting enough, they kept some distance from this pathological setting.
That's really a reassuring thing to hear.
Yeah. But not all of them did that. But enough did it to shake the confidence of the researchers.
Now, how would you describe a resilient child? We all want one, of course.
In my research, I found I was not alone in finding these. A lot of factors, resilience factors. I organized them around the paradigm I have, I am, I can. I found that the resilience factors lent themselves to that kind of organization. What do I have? What are the supports I have? Who are my role models? What are the limits of my behavior? Where are the services for me? And those I call I have. And I'm encouraged to be independent. Now, not a year-old, but a two-year-old knows he or she is different from you, and that's why the magic no communicates. Then I am our internal strengths. Am I optimistic? Do I have faith? Do I have confidence? Am I a nice person? Am I empathic and caring of others? Am I responsible for my own behavior? Am I optimistic and hopeful? Those qualities are very real. I think of the pessimistic person. When I was in high school, my high school friend and I went swimming. This is in Chicago, off of North Avenue Pier. And there was a tide that was spinning around the posts of the pier. And we got stuck in it. So I'm starting to swim and, come on, come on. We're not going to make it. We're not going to make it. I kept saying, we are, we are, we are. She kept saying, we're not going to make it. We are, we are. We got out of it. I said, why were you so negative?
Oh, my.
And unfortunately, being negative can hold you back. It can hold
you literally, back. Literally, it sounds like.
If you don't think you can get through this, you maybe won't get through it. So we have to respect optimism. I know people talk about being too optimistic, pie in the sky kind of stuff. But I think the glass is half full and not half empty. And we have to get the energy to deal with an adversity.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about children's social and emotional well-being in the event of an environmental disaster.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are discussing children's social and emotional well-being in an environmental disaster with Dr. Edith Grotberg. You think historically, many leaders were able to rally whole populations just by feeling or at least conveying optimism. I'm thinking of the Franklin Roosevelt speech, which really didn't tell anybody to do anything, but it rallied a nation that was really in trouble.
I remember that well. Yes, that's an excellent example. And this is where leadership is so critical. And the parents are the leaders in the home. So they must communicate optimism. They must communicate, we can handle this. We're all right. We're safe. We will get through this. This is where parents play that role, very importantly. And then the third category is I can, things I can do. I can stay with a task. I have persistence, which is important. I can see the humor in life. Nothing breaks tension faster than humor. I can express my thoughts and feelings. I can problem solve. I can reach out for help when I need it. So I organize them to I have, I am, I can. And I find this is easy to grasp. I even copyrighted it.
Oh, wow. For you.
Because it grasps the basic ideas of what are your resources when you have to deal with an adversity.
And when you're saying about reaching out for help, that presupposes, I guess, in the mind of a resilient child, that the help will be there.
That presupposes that, and it had better be there. But it's interesting. A young boy, he was about 7 years old, watched his father and a neighbor fight and argue over some line that each claimed. And it had reached the blow stage. And one of the men had actually taken out a gun and was aiming it at the guy. Now, the son saw this, the little boy. He ran to his grandfather and told him what was going on, and the grandfather called the police immediately. Now, one of the important things with children, when they do something incredible like that, reached out for help and knew where to go, you reward it. What a wonderful thing you did. See, that's resilience. And you have to reinforce the behavior that is consistent with resilience.
Most of us as adults want to ensure our children's emotional well-being when there's an emergency. What practical steps can we take as parents to help our children learn to cope?
Well, the American Psychological Association, I think, has done some very good work on this, and that's www.apa.org. And you can get these. They have a lot of material on resilience. And I think they have put together a very good list. The first thing is to talk to your children or your child whenever you can. You must talk to them about the things that can happen, about the resources they have to call. The cell phone is a wonderful tool to have to call when something bad happens at school or something bad happens in the community and they can reach their parents. So it's talking to your children whenever you can, and that bad things happen. And here's what you can do. And sometimes fire occurs. Well, what should we do about the fire? Sometimes someone has broken into the home. Okay, what do we do about that? Sometimes you lock yourself out. What do we do about that? Sometimes there is a shooter who is going around shooting people, and you have to understand that you can deal with this. Protect yourself, hide, reach out for help if you need to, but you are not totally unable to deal with these, and you have some resources. If nothing else, call home or report to the teacher or call 911. And we find children do this. 4 and 5 years old are calling 911. Isn't that marvelous?
That's amazing.
As long as they're calling it when it's necessary and not when it's not.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yes.
And the temptation is very real. But as a matter of fact, one little girl did call 911. She was 4 years old, and she knew about 911. And of course, they wouldn't believe her.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother had passed out and had some diabetic reaction. So it's talking. And then making the home safe emotionally. You are loved here. You are protected here. We care about you. We care about what happens to you. This is a safe haven. It's very important. The home is our refuge. I know every time I step into my home, I can feel myself relaxing. Okay, here's a refuge. Now the place may blow up.
Who knows what's next, right?
It's a detail.
Yeah, right. But at least I feel safe. And then limit the amount of news that children see. When we had the sniper attack, this is one of the problems. Too many children were watching television. And this is true today. When things are very bad and they're shown on television, they go into kind of increasingly gory detail. Children see this. And since our media, because they want viewers and they want listeners, and I understand that, they have to stimulate them. You can't just have, well, today's a nice day, good night. You have to have stimulating things or people turn it off. But for children to be watching that, they don't understand that things are out of balance. We show more of what's wrong than we do of what's right. We try to scare people more than we try to calm them. And that's to get them to watch. And we do enjoy fear, and we do enjoy being stirred up. And that's what we watch. Look at our TV shows. So this is the world we live in, and children have to have some limits to access to these kinds of things. And then another one is to realize that the stresses of what's going on around can make everything more stressful. If you're very upset about a flood or a series of killings or robberies, if you're very upset about that, the tension in the home inevitably rises. So you have to try to keep people calm. And one way you do that is let the children talk about it and you talk about it so they can express their feeling. We don't always know what our kids are feeling. I remember when my children were young and they were sitting on the floor watching a television show. I think they were probably 7 and 5. The twins were 5 and the older girl was 7. And they were watching Johnny Appleseed and they started to cry. And it shows him going to heaven. I said, well, he's all right. He's doing what he wants. He's planting apple seeds, and he's in heaven doing the same thing. He's very happy. And they kept crying. And so finally I said, what are you crying about? He had to walk so far.
Oh, my. He had empathy for his journey.
He had empathy for his journey. Oh. But then I had to remember that we lived out in the country, and they had to take a school bus every day. And our threat was always, if you don't make the school bus, you have a long walk.
Oh.
And it was a far walk. So when I understood it, I said, oh, the bus. I said, he did this over years. He didn't.
He didn't miss the bus.
But I was totally wrong. Oh, and so you have to find out what's bothering them because you can be wrong.
Yeah. And I think there's always a fear on the part of parents that if you open the Pandora's box of asking the kids what they're thinking about in a stressful situation, you're going to hear something that then what do you do about it? You can't make it right. And so it's too scary to ask them.
Now, that's an interesting point. A parent can say, well, we'll have to think about that. Let's talk about that later. We have to think about what we can do in this kind of a situation. I hadn't thought about it, but let's talk about that later. And certainly a teenager could get involved in such a discussion. Mm-hmm. And even a sixth grader, fifth and sixth grader. And be sure to take care of yourself, your health. Don't just think of other people. And this is what happens to parents sometimes. They think only of others and not themselves so that the children don't see that their support is falling apart or is going to get injured or is taking too great a risk. Watch your child for signs of fear and anxiety and then let them talk about it. And they need to be able to talk. One of the problems we have as a society is that we don't talk about our feelings. And this is particularly true for boys. Anger is all right. It's all right for a boy to be angry, but to show empathy, somehow that gets a little scary. They see that as kind of feminine. As a matter of fact, I've had some young men tell me that. Oh, that's for girls. No, it's not. Empathy is not just for girls. So it's a question of talking about your emotions and making sure that their feelings are okay, they're legitimate. And then maybe we don't need to be so afraid anymore if we do this and if we do that. Maybe that can reduce our sense of fear. But we can be cautious. So it's being honest and open without scaring them. And we're here. We will protect you and be optimistic. They have their 10 tips for parents with middle school children, very young children, preschool children. It's a good series. And then they have resilience in a time of war and basically the same ideas. And they actually have had this in schools where they talk about teaching resilience. So APA has done a good job.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's social and emotional well-being in the event of an environmental disaster.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Edith Grotberg about children's social and emotional well-being in an environmental disaster.
When a child's environment is literally falling apart in an environmental disaster of whatever kind, what kinds of behaviors are normal for kids? What should parents expect to see?
Well, I don't think you can generalize. I think it depends on where the child is developmentally. Is he at the trust level? Does he have trust, which is the first year of life? Is he autonomous, which is second and third year of life? Can he take the initiative, which is 3 to 6? Is he industrious, which is school age, 6 to teens? Does he have an identity? That's the teenager. Who am I? How do I stack up against other children? It's where they are developmentally, which is very important. So you have to gauge that. And knowing where your child is developmentally, then you can begin to talk at that level. It's going to be all right. We'll take care of it. If you want to, you can go and play in your room, or you can stay with me. It's whatever you want. Children are going to regress in a crisis. They will regress. And you can see teenagers regressing. In the Washington, D.C. area, when the sniper hit a young junior high boy, the school was very distraught. This was a junior high school. And the parents came, and even boys who wouldn't touch their parents were hugging them and let their parents hug them. The kids regress, and that's good.
It sounds like it's positive in the sense
protection.
Of...
It's protection. They're going back to an earlier stage, a pre-crisis stage, where they feel safe again. And so they need the parents, and parents can say, well, I'll take you home, and then I'll go back to work. I'll stay with you. They need that reassurance of the parent is there. And they watch how the parents behave. They watch how the adults behave.
So if an adult falls apart, that basically tells the child that that's what you do in a crisis. You fall apart.
That's right.
You don't cope.
Now, in one of my research studies, this was junior high, again, about a sixth grader. They were in a classroom, and the teacher had spent all kinds of time over months teaching them what to do in an emergency. And in this case, an earthquake came, and they knew earthquakes came quite readily. And so the teacher ran out and left the kids alone.
Oh, no.
So one of the boys just decided to take over, and he guided people around and took care of them. And the sixth grader
took it on.
Good.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing where the leadership can come from in dealing with these tragedies. Mm-hmm.
We hope that the everyday interactions with our children do model some of these positive coping strategies so that they pick them up. That kind of leadership is a great example. How can they transfer effectively these coping strategies to stressful settings?
Just by behaving the way they behave. We're going to get through this. It's okay. It's reassuring the child that you can handle it and you will get through it. This is going to be tough, but we can manage it. So it's that role modeling that gives confidence. Now, the risk you run there is that the child becomes too dependent on the adult and doesn't break that. They don't feel they can take care of themselves in a crisis, that they have to depend on someone. So you don't want to communicate that kind of permanent dependency. And so you can give the child something to do to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. It's very important that they feel part of the solution.
When children experience a disaster in their environment, is there any kind of an emotional fallout that is more long-lasting than the immediate situation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of caution. New situations, sizing it up very carefully, not trusting as much as should be. You know, trust is the basis of all human relationships. And if you don't trust yourself and trust others, you're in real trouble. So a child who tries to solve too many problems alone is going to have trouble. They need to know their limits. They need to know when to reach out for help.
Dr. Grotberg, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who would like to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing with you?
I edited a book called Resilience for Today, Gaining Strength from Adversity. I was editor of it. I have other contributors, and it's in the libraries. This won the American Library Association highly recommended book in all categories. Then there is a website that is at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and that is ResilNet, resilnet dot uiuc dot edu. Now, that has my first book. This is one I did, A Guide to Promoting Resilience in Children, Strengthening the Human Spirit. That can be downloaded free on that website.
Well, we have been very fortunate to have somebody who covered an awful lot of bases today. So, Dr. Edith Grotberg, thank you so much for sharing your expertise about children's social and emotional well-being with us.
Thank you. It's a delight being here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our most recent book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And mention show number 333 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our special thanks to the American Psychiatric Foundation for the generous grant enabling us to produce this show. We need your help. Please click onto and complete the very brief survey about this show at our website, www.parentsperspective.org. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.